So, as far as the discussion is concerned, we have selected the Attakavagga, and before going to the discussion, if someone is having any other issue or question or topic or any criticism, we can take few minutes. If it is available, please present.
Sri Bante, can you hear me?
Yes, please.
Bante, we have received two reports, but they both are Sinhala, so we will forward them to Isarna one.
Yes, and 18th we are starting, of course today we are starting, and tomorrow we are starting one from the Sydney, so you can connect it to Chamila, understand?
Yes, Bante, I'll forward them according, thank you.
So forward it to me as well as Chamila, as well as Priyanka, so definitely it will go to Chamila. It is, I think, 7 days. A longer retreat, so we are single person questions are we are forwarding to Sydney retreats, please.
Okay, Bante, thank you.
Okay, so if there are no other, I will invite Venerable Buddharakita Bante to go into the next step.
Okay, so it's the this is called in English the octad on the cave, the Guta, how do I say? Guhataka Sutta. Yeah. So, stuck in the cave, densely covered over, dwelling immersed in bewilderment, a person such as this is far from exclusion, for in the world, sensual pleasures are not easily abandoned. Based upon desire, bound to enjoyment of existence, they let go with difficulty, for there is no release through others. Concerned too with the future or the past, they hanker for these sensual pleasures or earlier ones. Those greedy for sensual pleasures, intent on them, are confused, stingy, settled in the unrighteous. When they come upon suffering, they lament. What will we be after we pass away from here? So in this sutta, again, the Buddha is continuing a theme about sense pleasures and how being stuck in the body, in this case he means a cave, that the body is like a cave, the mind is stuck inside this body and densely covered over. Like he describes it in terms of a cave as a confinement or as someplace ignorant or someplace kind of bestial, that it is stuck in a cave, that it is like a confinement, that the body is confined and dwelling immersed in bewilderment. Here, a strong synonym for ignorance itself, bewildered. A person such as this is far from seclusion. So normally one of the names for Nibbana is that it is cave, actually, a cave or an island. And it is a secluded place. Meditators, yogis, monks have historically sought out caves for a place for seclusion. But for the normal person, the body as a cave is not secluded. It is simply a covering over, and it is a bewilderment. So for such a person, this is far from seclusion. This is not a cave of seclusion. It is a cave of covering and bewilderment. For in the world, sensual pleasures are not easily abandoned. So here again, the Buddha is acknowledging that sensual pleasures are indeed not easy to abandon. So he's going to expound why they're not easy to abandon. But we should also acknowledge that it is a difficult path to tread, this spiritual path. And most people fall off of it because it is difficult. So I sometimes resent when people say, oh, you know, it's easy or this or it's that. It's not easy. If it was easy, a lot of people would be doing this. And I think we should all respect very well and highly the efforts of Satipatthana, of anybody to meditate any length of time, or to even as listeners to this Dhamma today, we need to appreciate that this is quite a special effort, that we're going against the grain and the curve of sensual pleasures, and it is a difficult path. And you might think, well, this isn't very difficult just here sitting listening to the Dhamma talk today. But actually, it's a very special effort. And, you know, when we fail to appreciate the good, then we let it slip away again, because we're going to see some of the different strategies that these hindrances have to bewildering us. So based upon desire, bound to enjoyment of existence, they let go with difficulty, for there is no release through others. So again, here's an allusion to that this is the only way, this is the only path, that there is no release for us. Most people seek release through sense pleasures, through the sex, drugs and rock and roll. But so few really seek release through this path of how the Buddha has laid it out. So this is a rare, very rare thing. We are normally guided by desire, based upon desire, bound to enjoyment. And letting go is with difficulty. You know, why should I let go of my in pleasure? Concerned too with the future or the past, they hanker for these sensual pleasures or earlier ones. So again, this is only when you sit down to meditate can you see how much the mind is preoccupied with the past, the future. And normally when we go into the future, we're anxious about the present moment. And normally when we go into the past, we're regretful in the present moment. That's just a general rule of thumb, but we can have habits. And also you can see with age, normally younger people are future orientated and normally older people are past orientated in their stream of thought, but they're not present moment orientated. And that's a great tragedy and a great loss, because it's only in the present moment that we can do anything, and it's only really the present moment that exists. And thoughts about the past are present moment thoughts about the past, just as thoughts about the future are present moment thoughts about the future. But we get swept away. We become, as he said earlier on, covered over and bewildered by these thoughts and fantasies, and they're not actually in reality. We're hankering for sensual pleasures or earlier ones. So those greedy for sensual pleasures, intent on them, are confused, stingy, settled in the unrighteous. Again, we're switching between desire and greed, different intensities of tanha, of this seeking sensual pleasures, and how it manifests for people. It manifests in terms of confusion, like I don't know which thing I want, or stinginess, like I'm unwilling to share my surplus, and settled in the unrighteous. So it doesn't matter how I get these things. I'm not moral about these things. The ends justify the means, as it were. When they come upon suffering, they lament. And always that case, it's like a carrot and a stick. If I get the reward of sensual pleasures, I'm happy. If I don't get the reward, I'm suffering. I have the stick. What will we be after we pass away here? So again, people are deluded about the nature. They don't realize that this is a karmic force happening, kamavatu, and that they're just going to go according to their defilements and according to their actions. So by being stingy, they fail to, in a way, begin the path of dana, sila, bhavana. And by being stingy, they lack mudita. They lack an appreciative joy in the skills, the welfare, the benefit of people like monastics. They view us as wretched, as people who are not even needy. We are in need. We're fools because we've given up everything and we've put it aside. So like we're beyond help. So for a stingy-minded person, you can't. It's very, very difficult to get onto the path. They will fail because they are not generous. They will fail because they despise what we do, and they will fail because they have no mudita, and they will fail because they can't be taught as a result. So it's a tragedy. Stinginess is a really nasty defilement and quite misunderstood a lot of the time. And the importance of dana is quite underestimated. It is a profound quality of mind to be developed, that to be able to share an abundance is a wonderful opportunity for real spiritual progress, and we fail to do this. You know, we're counting our pennies, and we lose the pounds. So anyway, maybe we can stop there. We've had a few verses, and we'd love to hear what you have to say, Mahatero.
I will thank you for the selecting the this particular vagga, attaka vagga, because they consider it as a very, very philosophical, and language is quite archaic, and it is the essence, they say. That is basically the westernized scholars' idea, because they are very little talking about the basics and talking highly about the supreme or spiritual things, but as you mentioned, not as such. They are talking about the other things also. But there's a reason why people are arguing the superiority of Attakavagga is during the time of the Buddha itself, it has been selected as special. And therefore, some people attribute it to Venerable Sariputta. He has given a commentary during the time of the Buddha. That commentary is known as Mahanidesa, and Mahanidesa is accepted as canonical. This is the early signs of the arising of secondary data analysis, the commentaries, culture of commentaries. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta, some people attribute it to the Abhidhamma also, some people attribute it to the Attakavagga also. Attakavagga commentary is such a thick book, come under the Kuddaka Nikaya, Mahanidesa Pali, and Chula Nidesa Pali is on the Parayana Vagga. And these two are treated completely different. And so when someone is going to give a talk on the Parayana Vagga or Attaka Vagga, now we are in Attaka Vagga, they are mainly referring to the Mahanidesa. Because Mahanidesa language is more historical than contemporary commentaries. They are considered as canonical. So therefore, when someone is standardizing the Tripitaka, some people question them because they are definitely secondary data analysis. They are secondary, they are definitely analytical. They are definitely commentarial. But since it is accepted, I came to know these stories and the content of this thing by listening to the Nivane Nivima, the mind is still, and that is what we just discussed in Singhala just before, and where Venerable Jnanananda is fairly accepting the Mahanidesa Pali. And the many of the things Venerable now talking about is pertaining to the first sutta, Kama Sutta, whereby you can understand the sensuous pleasure. It is such a bewildering thing, it is such a doping thing. So, are you attribute that is to the dopamine hormone? Have you heard about the dopamine? No?
Yes.
Yeah. Dopamine is whenever you have to have a pleasure or thanks or achievement, the mind make dopamine hormones in the synapses. And this is one of the hormones. So, we are addicted to it because it is beyond our consciousness. Like, it is appear like a physical thing. So, we are get attracted to that. And in the Kama Sutta, Buddha listing them. According to the Indian tradition, what are the things people get attracted into? That means addicted into. The Kama Sutta, what we discuss, Kittan Vattun Hiranyang Vagavasa Dasa Porisang Thiyo Bandhu Putukame Yonaro Anugijyati. It says that the least like the wetland, dryland, I mean farmlands, gold, which is not worked. Amurang, it is the gold cubes, that is not ornaments, gold, and cows, horse, and laborers, or dasa, slaves, and Thiyo, special term, that is for the female related. Itti means female bird. This is Thiyo is indicate, that is, and your relatives, many and many. So they give dopamine hormone. It's very innocent. But now in psychiatrists and all the kind of, this is how much the dopamine enzyme decide your consciousness. It is pre-decided. Because that he is from Ireland and you are from UK, USA, he is from different kind of village, I am from different, my set of dopamine addiction is different from you. So, and you are also innocent, I am also innocent, because that's the way we are being justified. These dopamines are okay. Otherwise, adrenaline may come and get excitement and all the kind of thing. There is one another hormone, I don't know, I am learning now. And these things, we have no question, as you mentioned, by hook and, how do you call it, crook. We do it. And we justify, and will we justify by means, whatever the means we are going to say. So that is the way the political, that's the way the economic and social. So individual cannot raise the head. So therefore, we are very vulnerable to this dopamine hormone. So in the psychiatric course, before I heard this term, I asked the psychiatrist. He took time into introducing this hormonal action. Then I told you, in Sinhala we call dope, you know. Dope means get addicted, get doped. After drinking a certain level, you go beyond control. What is the term you are using?
Drunk.
Drunk is okay. At half, he's drunkard. It's the colloquial term is get doped. He's doped.
You're mixing terms. Just because they sound the same.
Okay, that is what I am going to mix you. I asked the person, is this dopamine is related to the dope?
No, it's sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Dope?
Excitement.
Excitement.
Even little children running around playing is dopamine.
Yeah.
You can't say that's drugs, they're doped.
No, I mean, when you are with alcohol, after a certain level, you go beyond and you keep on control, keep on addicting, and it is not going to give you a pleasure. But it was early parties, very pleasurable. So we call get doped. So children get doped with the playthings. And the ladies can get by the costumes. Males may go for alcohol. I'm just giving an example. And academic people go by degrees and all the kind of thing. So they keep on doing. So that part, when they are going to study with the chemical body and how the consciousness is related. So whole world is promoting. That's why the individual find very difficult. That's the Kama Sutta is given. And now we are going to go to the next one. And there, the mind is like a storeroom, guhatta, accumulating all these loud things. So we attracted to that. Our house also, guhatta, gehatta. Gehasita is household, is all desired things we have. So, likewise, mind has desired immaterial thing. So, we are so attracted to that more than our life. So, Buddha is asking, can you replace them by immaterial pleasure? Immaterial pleasure can you replace by immaterial, intermediate, no pain, no pleasure situation? And from the no pain, no pleasure situation to the reductionism, to the system approach, and like keep on doing. So, but we are... It is very difficult. It is very. We are completely wind. We are double wind, win-win. But we are not happy. That's the only sad thing. Still, we are not happy. We are very worried about this all-conquering karma. We have nothing to worry. Because we individually, we have not fought together. We individually thought, what the bullshit that? We already came to this life and we are not only that, we are thinking about the furtherance. And we can see the people still in the mud, in the bog. And they are going to teach us, you people are defeated, you people are running away from the society, you people are in the forest, please come and give a fight. The lion will not give a fight with the pig in the shit. That's a simple example. So we have to say, no, we are happy. So much. Relatively happy because when I decide to get ordained or to go into the mindfulness, your way is completely different. And your way is completely different. We are now under the same roof, different issue. But what a concurrence. After 2,600 years, after so much of information technology and artificial intelligence and all bullshit, and we are happy. We are not radiating energy. We are not with the aura, but we are happy. So therefore, it is simple. That's why Buddha kept first truth, truth of suffering. It is not difficult to earn this monkhood, but to get rid of this desire. And they are thinking, they are in a position to advise us. Who the hell? Who Pandita Sahib says, who the hell? Someone can tell the monk to do this and that. We know what to do. Whatever we do, we are responsible. So therefore, monks in a different company, and they are responsible about that, and they are very alert. Among ourselves also, we have likings and dislikings are different. But I am so happy, because I am always thinking that majority part of my fight is finished. But still I find very sad, very cornered, very isolated monks. I feel so sorry. They are not belong to the Kama Loka, they are not belong to the monks Loka. They are in between suffering. That is what I call Atta Kilamatan Yoga. They are messages or sadistic. We also sometimes at a time we are sadistic or masochist. But many of the time we are happy. Because this karma is so attractive, which is guhata, we know to a certain extent we must have it. But the luxury is consumerization. We understood it. Sorry that I am using the term we. We have to go into the singularity. I understand it. And that is by, it also my capacity, it is my capabilities, not by someone's promotion. So therefore, I am not going to tell anyone, I am not going to promote, please renounce. Because it is not a joke for everyone. It's a very serious thing. So therefore, the Kama Guhataka Sutta, paving the path to the Guhata Sutta, and he said, the mind is accumulation of likings and disliking. And we protect it more than our life. But my friend can understand what is my liking and disliking by the dialogue. And therefore, we are practicing as a group meditators. And the other dimension is my mindfulness. If I am self-critical and ready to be simple and honest and innocent, my likings and dislikings. But don't think we can live without liking and disliking. We must have liking and disliking. But we must know what is the pragmatic, what is the practical. So therefore, karma is a very beautiful subject. I have very little hate for the karma. Because I can see people, what are the suffering they do by attracted to the karma. And I am not cutting off from that. I am just very alert to see how people and how they justify. And they say, monks, we are fool. Because we are not in the fight. No, we are not in the fight. But we are utterly benefited because of the media. We know what is happening in the world. Not by my extrasensory powers. I know through YouTube. So I am happy with the artificial intelligence. I am happy with the technology, but not for the appreciation. I am not appreciating it. I am taking the mean advantage. So therefore, you can say karma is a very attractive, very dangerous, very venomous, very... but it's a joke. It is not a serious thing because we have done. We have already done with. So therefore, don't take it as a very seriously. Sometimes we are succumb to the karma. Many times we recluse, we people love this kind of a discussion is our mind prepared, mindset is prepared to see the negative side of karma. I think that is the most important achievement, but the most unfortunate thing is we are not appreciating that. You are not appreciating that. There's no one to appreciate you. You have to appreciate yourself. We know the Guhatta. What does it mean by? And we still have some contamination. But we are looking forward the better side. And lucky enough, there are better people. There are efficient people more than us. And we can understand from the past, we are slowly refining, aren't we? We are daily refining. So therefore, the difficult sutta, I appreciate it. But our path is correct. That is why day by day we are going to go for these difficult suttas. But it's not so difficult because this book is available, the Mahanidesha, and this commentary is also available. And if someone is going to discuss about the Attakavadda Parayana Vagga, even one particular stanza can make a PhD. There's so much of commentaries available. So by handling the commentaries, you get hardly any time to express yourself because they are well described. So we are very happy. That is why people not happy to go to them because they are self-critical. They are critical about the sensuous pleasure or dopamine. So therefore, we have to learn it from the different side. I'm very eagerly waiting how the scientific exploration is going to teach what a fool you are. You are searching outside. Such an insight is available. Same tool. You are searching outside. I mean, without outside, you can't completely understand. Therefore, you must have this thing. But don't miss the chance that we are in a, we have a fully equipped laboratory. Our mind is not a guhatta now. It is the lab. It's an experimenting laboratory, so we can compare it with. So I am again thanking you for this selecting this particular vagga. So if there are no other comments or commentaries, we can go ahead. But I would like if someone others are happy, if they are happy to express their views, welcome.
So I just want to touch once again and just go back to it is where in the second stanza the Buddha says they will let go with difficulty for there is no release through others. And I mentioned how difficult it is to follow this path of renunciation. And I just want to emphasize the importance of this verse in this section where he says, for there is no release by others. By reminding people of the verse in the Dhammapada, by oneself is evil done, by oneself is one defiled, by oneself is evil left undone, by oneself is one purified. Purity and impurity depend upon oneself. No one can purify another. So this kind of sense of personal responsibility for one's own actions is extremely at the core of the earliest teachings of the Buddha, as we can hear today. I mean, this sutta that we're talking about is from the earliest levels of the teachings and dispensation by the Buddha. And as mentioned, the so-called kind of commentarial tradition on it is also extremely early and very deep in its in its quality. So the early commentators refer us back to this Dhammapada verse to emphasize how no one can release ourselves from our own trouble, that we have to take responsibility. So these days when you hear people blaming others for all the woes of the world, we need to really be careful and ask ourselves, what is my own action in this, and what responsibility do I need to take here in this situation? And I want to also expound a little bit on stinginess, because again, stinginess, the antidote to stinginess really is things like chaganusati and also mudita, and these get I think confounded. I have made a kind of a special effort around especially mudita and chaga, and I see the difference between them, but it was interesting for me when I came across in the commentaries and expounding on what is stinginess according to the early the earliest times of the Buddha. So because of stinginess, they go down. Because they are miserly, because they do not accept the world pronouncement, teaching, instruction of Buddhas and disciples, how are they stingy? Because they go down. They go to hell, to the animal realm, to the sphere of afflicted spirits. How are they stingy? Because they are miserly. There are five kinds of miserliness regarding the dwellings, families, gains, praise, and the Dhamma. Those people endowed with this miserliness, stinginess, are negligent. How are they miserly? Because they do not accept the instruction of the Buddhas and disciples. They do not take in their instruction, do not want to listen, do not bend their ear, do not incline their minds to understand. Settled in the unrighteous, settled in the unrighteous body action, unrighteous verbal action, unrighteous mental action, settled in such unrighteous deeds as destroying life, taking what is not giving, sexual misconduct, and so on. So stinginess is a very profound quality, and by practicing things like mudita, which is, you know, one of the four Brahma Viharas, we often talk so much about metta and karuna, but we don't really address mudita and gloss over it and make out like it's very simple and not profound. But without stinginess, you know, without mudita, we will find it really difficult to learn from another. We will not take joy in somebody who has achieved a mastery. Like these days, people are so dismissive. They'll just say, it's just your opinion. You know, you could be an expert doctor or surgeon or pilot, and somebody will walk up and say, it's just your opinion. You only have an opinion on how to fly an airplane. Like, I've been looking at this in Wikipedia, so I have some two-minute knowledge about this. And it's a kind of a stinginess. It's a failure to take joy in the excellence and mastery of another. And it's so we don't learn. How can you learn from a teacher if you have contempt that they are somehow superior to you? Or, you know, it's a very fragile quality, stinginess. It's a mean quality, and it's lacking in joy. It's completely desiccated and dried out. Whereas joy is unctuous, and it's oily, and it's sweet, and it's uplifting, and stinginess is the opposite quality. It really is a parched land. It's a desert. It's dried out, and so stinginess is a quality to, you know, we need to exercise against. You have to kind of practice and grow up and give and take, and not to be taken for a fool on the one hand, but on the other hand, looking for the opportunities to be actually generous and be ready to move on. I was talking to a relative recently, and they have a very large house. They have been prosperous, and now they're old. And this big house of theirs is like, because the house prices are going up where they're living at the moment, they had somebody appraise it, but then they said, how do we get rid of all these possessions? And I mean, like I said to them, you'll either give them away with a cold hand or a warm hand. And it's a Chinese expression. To give it a cold hand means you've died. You give it a warm hand means you're alive when you give the stuff away. But here's their possessions, weighing them down. And, you know, when I ask them, what are you doing? And they say, we're busy. And what are you busy doing? Oh, we're busy looking after our possessions. We're busy moving them around, dusting them and cleaning them, tidying them, employing somebody to come in once or twice a week to clean the house, you know, rather than, as they say, right-sizing and moving on. But they are trapped in a cave of their own possessions. And I'm not necessarily saying it's stinginess, but this is the trap around possessions. And it can be very liberating to be as free as a bird, something like how monks aspire to live. And this, to live as free as a bird is also its own challenge. You know, you have to be secure inside your own heart. But for most people, possessions are possessing them. They don't possess the possessions. The possessions possess them. And they're like a crutch. You know, I was trying to encourage Mahatero here to do some exercises for an arm stiffness he has. And, you know, the attitude was like, oh, I can get a crutch for this. You know, I can get a crutch. Well, why don't you just exercise and have your own internal strength and bones and muscles doing the job? You know, we're all looking for crutches in our life. But when we give the external world the power over ourselves, then we are very much diminished. And it's this journey inwards and cultivating our own inner strengths. So when we have inner strength, when we have inner abundance, stinginess would be horrible. It would be like, why would I want to hang on to all those things that are unnecessary to me? They're only tying me down. But we don't see the flaw in these things. And so stinginess becomes a very nasty quality.
So I also agree the stinginess, but my education is fully on. I am really sarcastic to the education. Two reasons. One thing is I love my playful life. Second thing is my family members are fully mature and fully academic people. And therefore when I go to school, everyone laugh at me. Because my brothers and sisters are very good. So I considered, I hated English best. So I learned best, English. And mindfulness also, I never thought even because I am a more unspiritual and morally poor fellow. So mindfulness gave me a chance. And maths as a subject. I hate it. But I am fairly good in learning maths because my hatred. So therefore, it is not stinginess. It's a kind of, you have to fix a target. And that target is not a lovable one. So you take it. And ultimately, I would like to say, the hatred is the knowledge. If you have no hatred, you will never learn. You are contented here and be here. But learning means that you know this one day it will be useful. So you have to sacrifice the present moment and learn that particular skillfulness. But that also, you can keep it open. Not necessarily, but I know nowadays knowledge comes along my way. And nothing to go in search of. But what is necessary is coming. So I have to sort it out. And there I may reject something, I may collect something. So therefore keep it open. I accept is the opposite of the jealousy or stinginess. So I try my best to keep it open. But after teaching long time about the grammar, Pali and Vinaya, Vinaya Dasana told, your old opinion is exactly the same. Whatever you are learning, you are the same old fellow. So I reported that to Venerable Dhammigar, my spiritual teacher. He said that you are well developed, that means. No one can change you. So I am learning, but I never appreciate what I am learning. I know I can understand fairly amount of Pali. I think I die. It is not necessary. Grammar. It is not necessary to have this and that, the pragmatic value. So therefore it appears like adamantation. Foolhardy, but otherwise we can't renounce. If we are follow the suit with the family members and the spiritual people, what we were talking, they would have got bogged down in household. Due to this adamant nature, due to this against the grain, putting signal to the right hand and turning the vehicle to the left hand, that is the way ultimately we earned our own seclude, our own solitude. Otherwise, if you are going to follow the majority, definitely you are on the way to hell. So therefore, I don't attribute that as to a stinginess. Stinginess is bad, but you are monitoring, you are maneuvering your boat in a such a way, not following someone, not copying something, but you give the due respect. But you are taking your own this thing, and in that sense, you appreciate mindfulness. Mindfulness is choiceless awareness, evilly suspended attention. So you are not going to make any comment. You are not going to make any commentary. Just follow. And at a stage, you will come across with these kind of very great suttas. And it is keeping the issue open. Rather than telling this is truth and this is not truth. And we are learning. So therefore, without that kind of an attitude, this is that kind of a mindset, very difficult to understand Attakavagga. Attakavagga is a very deep thing. Not talking about the trivial thing. Trivial things appear like an example, but you have to go deep and deep. And the dialogue is still necessary. That is why it comes as a discourse. So we are proceeding venerable.
So therefore a person should train right here. Whatever in the world one might know as unrighteous, one should not on its account act unrighteously. For the wise say, this life is short. I see in the world this population trembling all over, addicted to craving for states of existence. Inferior people prattle in the mouth of debt, not devoid of craving for various states of existence. So again here, the Buddha encourages us that we need to train here, right here, right now. And this emphasis on this word training is, again, I find very hopeful that we can train ourselves. We can be conditioned or trained or moved away from the instinctual behavior, as it were, around sense pleasures and greed and stinginess. We can train ourselves out of these things. And it is about substituting bad habits with good habits and moving towards the light and away from the dark. But we do have to perceive that there is a darkness, that there is a dark slope. And he reminds us that, and that's where this importance of death and awareness of death, or thinking about death, and he describes inferior people prattling in the mouth of death. So death contemplation is very important. And for a monastic, it's a very important practice too, because it brings a sense of imperative. It's not a morbidity. It's not dwelling on, death is horrible or this or that. It's actually that life is very special and it is very short and it is very immediate. And as he says here, it is short. You know, so we should, for the wise say, this life is short. And why is he saying that life is short? Well, because it is short on two grounds. Life is short because it is transient. And life is short because it is essentially fragile. So it is transient, meaning as soon as we're born, we're getting older and aging, and we're going to die. So it is short. It is not a very long life, and it is fragile because we depend on inhalation and exhalation. We depend on food. We depend on warmth. We depend on shelter. We depend on so many factors. So it is fragile. If those factors are not available, then we will pass away. So again, life is fragile and short. And this isn't something to be, like I said, morbid and just bogged down with. This is actually to perk us up and go, okay, every day is a ticket for me to cultivate and change my behaviors in a skillful way, in a skillful direction, and that I can free myself from this swamp of rebirth, and especially rebirth and also defilements. And so I see in this world this trembling population all over, addicted to craving for states of existence, not devoid of craving for various states of existence. So again, we're living not in the present moment. We're living here and there. We're living in the past. We're living in the future. We're living in fantasy. And we're not living at all as a result. This is the irony. And we're trembling all over. We're trembling especially with our views, with defilements. We tremble with exertion. We tremble over our results. We tremble because of misconduct. We tremble because of lust. We tremble because of hate. We are deluded. We are deluded by delusion. We are bogged down in the cave, as he mentioned earlier on. We're bound by conceit. We're seized with wrong views. We're distracted by restlessness. We're indecisive about doubt. So again, you know, this is, so these verses are so pregnant in meaning about how we are trembling, and we ignore our trembling. We're disgusted by our trembling. We're not in the present moment to experience our trembling. But when we are in the present moment, it is the only way to access this kind of trembling and become familiar and understand its behavior and actually finally come to some peace and rest. And we're addicted to craving for states of existence because it's just our habit. We don't know anything else. We only know existence. And we know existence in terms of form, sounds, odors, tastes, and tactile objects, mental phenomena. All kinds of existence we will seek out. And so we move from one realm to the next, to the next, to the next. And there's such a momentum in every life, a momentum of I like to be around my family and friends. I don't like to be around my enemies and people who give me trouble. And this momentum doesn't end in this life. It brings us from this life into the next life, and it brings us from one realm to the next. So we're addicted to these states of existence. So when we move from being an anagami to an arahant, this is the final cord to be cut, is this tether to existence. And this is, so this is a profoundly difficult thing to uproot. But yet here we need to, because we are just trembling over things that we take as mine. We tremble about all these things. So maybe you want to start?
Yeah, that's the next two verses. Regarding this, that particular stanza about the training yourself. If you see something wrong, if something is vicious, you restrain from it. And that is being discussed as the evolution also in the Western way. Another thing is the God's wish or wrath. Or the next thing is, by knowing that, you can train yourself, and the gradual process. And in the evolution, by sacrificing so much of lives, the new gene starts, and that genetical continuation is happening. And some say it is the wrath of the God, that Buddha is giving something different. He says, you yourself can do within your short life, you can adjust yourself. That is what you call neuroplasticity. Earlier they thought, no, it is always pre-decided, or it is evolutionary thing, it is unconscious. So this is conscious development, conscious involvement is necessary. That is what you call sikha. So that means innocence, simple term. And you are innocent and you are not arrogant. So therefore, even you are not innocent at a time, if you are not innocent, arrogant at a time, never time. Next time, whenever you see a good teacher, whenever you see good Dhamma, you can adjust yourself. So therefore, the tasmai sikheta ideva jantu yankinchi janna visamanti loke. If you, something is aggressive, something is not conducive, you have to avoid it. That is sikha, not innovation of something. You just knowing the bad thing, avoiding, that is what you call sabbapapasakarana. If the path is very rugged, you avoid it. And natasya hetum visamang chareya. Therefore, he never go into that because he has his own experience. And the religion is always to say, for future, you have to sacrifice this and that, and do meritorious deeds, in future you will not met up with visama, or uneven, undulated situation. But that is not. Whatever the undulated situation, what is uneven situation, if you know, and if you avoid it, that is what you call restraint, definitely you are withdrawing back, and you will understand from therapeutic to healing, therapeutic to preventative, not to go into that situation, nip it at the bud level. So that is the Buddha level. But we are learning it in a therapeutic level. We are learning in the healing level. Yes, healing, yes. But after a while, just like evolution, you develop new genes. You develop new genes to have a foresight. This is the undulated path. This is the even path. So likewise, slowly, slowly you are happening. So that ultimately, whenever the thing is happening, it happens without a consciousness. It is happening like a habituation. Habituation is a bad term, but here we are using habituation to do, habituation to avoid bad things. Then it is naturally habituation to the good things. I mean, habituation, I know it's a negative term. But asankharaka, without that training, become not to train. Have an appointment, you have a disappointment. So therefore, the training you have to understand is giving up and ceases to exist by itself. Therefore, the training is becoming cultured. It is becoming less and less. It is tapering off. So ultimately, everything happen as it dhammata, according to the Taoism. Things happen. So you are learning slowly the nature. You are learning the niyama dhamma, the world, the law of nature. So you are, by way of sacrificing your life, by way of living, you are doing. At the beginning, you are trying to live, but you never live. The day you give to the nature and live with the like a butterfly, then only the Buddha says you are living. Otherwise, you are in a dream. Otherwise, you are exhorting yourself. You get exhausted. So therefore, this is an art. So early part of it is, of course, regimentation. Early part is difficult in the Sikha. So therefore, you have to understand even this early part, you have to consider underestimate. Don't take it seriously. Yes, early part is difficult, but soon you can give up if you do it wholeheartedly. And then you come to the area where things are happening accordingly, smoother way, ultimately without your involvement. So there are no place for the evolution. There is no place for the God. You trust upon your sikha, your training. You are restrained. And in that sense, we are really, really engaged in Sikha. That is what I feel it. And I feel for the last 20, 30 years, that kind of people, they are believing their own restraint is the savior, is increasing. Not depending on the authorities, not depending on the weapons, not depending on the outside things. They have to. So now what you see, what we are learning through the corona, you have to have a social distance. You have to have your own immunity. And that is the way you have to do it. Now, in Sri Lanka, they say health system is completely collapsed. So you have to take these domestic systems, domestic ways to do it. Basically, not to go to the socialized way and get solitude. And those who are getting frustrated with the solitude and kind of things, they have to pay. Other people going, so ultimately it's a kind of a spiritual advice it is happening. So my interest is those who knew mindfulness before corona and those who do learning mindfulness under corona, drastically different. I am not hopeless. I am hopeful. So these things are giving a fertile ground for this kind of experimenting. So therefore karma is a very interesting subject. If you know restraint, you have nothing to worry and nothing to blame the people, those who are using karma, using tools. I mean, do. You also may do at a time. But ultimately, you will slowly come back to the Buddha way. So that is what I gathered from this the stanza, please.
And I'd like to add one thing, which is the commentary here is very interesting on what it has to say about wisdom. So in that verse, it says, the wise say life is short. And again, wisdom is something very understudied in the world. We don't have a university faculty on wisdom. We don't have a research department looking at wisdom. But yet, I think most people would say that wisdom is a very valuable thing to humanity. Yet we don't seem to practice it or study it. But it says here anyway that the wise are possessed of intelligence. It is wisdom that is called intelligence. That is wisdom, understanding, discrimination, investigation, discrimination of phenomena, discernment, acuity, sharpness, skillfulness, prudence, insight, clear comprehension, the faculty of wisdom, the power of wisdom, the knife of wisdom, the mansion of wisdom, the light of wisdom, the reliance, the radiance of wisdom, the lamp of wisdom, the gem of wisdom, non-delusion or freedom from delusion, discrimination of phenomena, right view. They are wise because they possess that wisdom. The wise say, the life of humans is short. Life is limited. Life is slight. Life is momentary. Life is fleeting. Life is transient. Life is life does not last long. So this is, just very profound teaching into the nature of what is wisdom. And this is a path of wisdom. So I don't see those kind of references very much. But I'll continue with the last three verses in this sutta.
See so them. We leave it for the next time. It was very interesting. Okay. It's a continuation of the Kama Sutta. And now we are taking the turn. Taking the turn to the wisdom side. And this part has a lot of commentaries.
Yes, I know. It's a lot of commentary to it. So just to remind people that we're following the Bhikkhu Bodhi translation in the Sutta Nipada. The actual sutta that we're referring to, you might be confused just listening to it, but it's a very short sutta. It's about one page in length. It's page 292, and it spills into 293. But the associated commentary on this is like a small booklet that goes with it. So both of us have been referring back and forth to the commentary. So just what I read out to you now on wisdom is a little section in the commentary to this one small verse. The small verse is, for the wise say that the wise say this life is short. So the commentary goes into what is the wise? What does this word wise or wisdom mean? And it's one of the rare instances where you get such a detailed explanation of wisdom. And it allows us to reflect carefully what is it that is the nature of wisdom. So this is a very rich body of work, and very profound and very ancient. And this is very much very lively, because it's in touch with the Buddha. You know, this is a real Buddha teaching happening here. And it isn't a dictionary, and it's not a manual, and it's, oh, just do this and just do that, and some sort of pat advice and glib remarks or something like that. The Buddha is extremely dense in his early teachings, and it's a very, if you're a monk and interested in the Dhamma, it's very lively.
So you never find in the Oxford or Harvard or any renowned universities, you can see how diversified, being the source is so at your hand, and where are they searching about? They are just coining words. Ultimately, they are turning around and come back to the same. So we try our best to go back to the source. Thank you very much for selecting Attakavagga. So we are going to end up the today's session. Thank you very much for the participation.